Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Jane Williams.
Accounting scandals, interference in scientific research, environmental cover-ups. From Alcon to Enron, whistleblower protections are needed to keep governments and corporations accountable. This week, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives organized a public forum to address these issues. We're going to hear three of the speakers at that forum. Duff Conacher is the Executive Director of Democracy Watch in Ottawa. May Burrows is with the Labour Environmental Alliance. We're going to hear from them later, but first, Jamie Court. He is Director of the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights in California. We join him as he describes the changing face of the workplace and the ever-increasing need for people courageous enough to speak out about abuses of power.
We used to have certain freedoms in the workplace, like to have long-term, in many cases, lifetime employment based on merit. The new insecurity that's coming up now is we're downsized even in profitable times, and regardless of whether we're doing a good job, regardless of merit, we're minimized. There is no long-term protection. There is no value in playing those roles. There's also the pressure in the workplace where once we had the old freedom that you were a professional and you work hard for the corporation and in turn you receive the latitude to have all sorts of privileges at work. Now we're watched by cameras in the workplace. There's a surveillance system. There have been reports that people routinely have their email read and sometimes have their voicemails monitored. And some people have actually been fired for making phone calls in the workplace, personal workplace. And yet corporations demand tremendous sacrifices. We have to be wired to the hive of the corporation all the time. We have to always be there for the corporation. And yet if we need to make a personal phone call, suddenly that's not a liberty we're given. Another example is our future employment options. We used to have a freedom that we owned our intellectual property. We owned what we thought and who we worked for and our freedom of association. Well, now we have these non-compete agreements where in some industries you will go into an industry and you cannot work for a competitor of your last company for a year. You just can't work for someone who competes in a region. Sometimes it's in a country. So corporations have limited our intellectual property. All these changes in the workplaces are what has put the corporation's priorities above the individual. And a lot of the work, those types of changes, subtle shifts, have made conditions where when whistleblowers do come forward, their colleagues don't support them. And I'll give you a couple of examples. A friend of mine, she used to work at a very large health maintenance organization in the United States. And she blew the whistle. She went and told the story of being a medical director. She's someone who approves or denies treatment requests from doctors on behalf of an insurance company. So she holds people's lives in her hands. Well, someone came who needed a heart transplant to her. The doctor wanted to get approval for a $500,000 heart transplant. She wanted to do it. The company told her no because it would save money, and she denied the request and changed her whole life. She came forward, told Congress, and really it made a difference in us reforming these HMOs, but her personal life, there was tremendous retaliation. There were phone calls in the middle of the night, crank phone calls, talking about her husband having an affair. There were people following her. Her marriage broke up. This is very common with whistleblowers. There is a retaliation in the workplace. Work friends, longtime friends, would no longer talk to her. She was blackballed. These are common problems among whistleblowers, and they are created by an environment in the workplace where society doesn't have the same value as the commercial gain of the corporation. There was a woman named Joanne Lowe who came forward in the wake of our big Northridge earthquake in Southern California. Anybody remember that? This was a huge earthquake, and afterwards, insurance companies were left with claims about fixing the homes, and they wanted to paint and patch rather than really fix foundations, so they sent people in to change adjusters' reports, not pay claims. A woman who came forward named Joanne Lowe worked in the adjusters' department. What did she do? She came forward and said, I think it's wrong. She told her boss. Her boss said, no, don't worry about it. She told her boss's boss. Her boss's boss said, if that's true, I'm going to fix it. Don't you worry about it. Didn't get fixed. Finally, she told an attorney. She was suddenly demoted. She was given a job that was beneath her. People wouldn't talk to her in the workplace. She quit. But she did help lawsuits that came afterwards to help these people get their homes rebuilt. But she has no financial stability because she's out of that industry. She had no financial reward for coming forward. It was a very sad case of someone with some courage who had an ethical attachment to society but went against the team. There was a very good story about Columbia HCA. Do you know about Columbia HCA? This is the largest hospital chain in America. It was at one point. It had 500, 600 hospitals. They were not a good hospital chain, a for-profit hospital chain. And there's a whistleblower came forward. He basically was an accountant, saw that the company was keeping two sets of books and bilking the federal government. So one set said the real cost of procedures. The other one was the one they were giving Medicare. He talked to his superiors about the problem. They didn't want to do anything. His superiors invited him on a vacation to Alaska from Montana, fired him. He had to fly back from Alaska knowing he was going to tell his wife he was fired. One thing that he could do was, actually in America we have a law that allows whistleblowers who find that the government's being bilked and come forward, they can bring a lawsuit and recover some of those damages for themselves. So the good news in this story was he came forward, sued. The government recovered the largest fraud case ever in the history of the government. It's about $800 million all told, or $900 million, somewhere in the middle. He got a sizable chunk of that and is now a very rich man. Someone won. The problem in America is that those protections, those financial incentives for whistleblowers to come forward, only apply to people who catch the government being bilked. They do not apply in private sector. We have a situation where we need to create those type of incentives. And in terms of what we can do and what you'll see in these experiences is, whenever someone speaks up in a workplace and tries to go through the chain of command, they run up against some pretty serious assumptions that it's going to do more damage to the corporation. The corporation is greater than the individual. The corporation is greater than the society. If individuals speak too loud, to save maybe one person is going to ruin health care for millions who get affordable health care because you saved that $500,000 heart transplant. There's a tremendous amount of misplaced logic, and it really it seeps into the workplace. So in California, we've taken some interesting steps. There is the carrot, the financial reward that we've done at the federal level, but there's also a stick. If a manager knows that something in the workplace is dangerous to the workers, and they don't come forward, they can be imprisoned. The state of California. We had a bill to extend that to financial fraud that year, last year, saying that if a corporate manager knew of fraud and didn't come forward, that they'd be personally liable. And it actually went through both houses of our legislature, but our governor vetoed it. He did say, Governor Davis, who has close relationships with all the companies that opposed it, but he said he would sign a bill to create safer conditions. We're going to, after this year, have a 1-800 hotline for whistleblowers in California, a safe haven for people to come forward. So as we think about this, I think we have to think two ways. One is the carrot and one is the stick. What can we do to make it easier and safer and financially viable for whistleblowers to come forward? Can we create a whistleblower protection system, like the witness protection system, but one that's more in tune with the whistleblower's needs? Can we find a better name than whistleblower? I think a traffic cop when I hear whistleblower. Can we find ways to change the language that put the individual within the corporation, their humanity, in a place where they can exert it and be free to? And we have done this with HMOs and healthcare. We have anti-retaliation statutes in California. Those are things you can create. The problem is this, that you can say that no one can retaliate against another worker for coming forward, but the reality is in the workplace it always happens, and you can never stop it from happening just by putting something in the law that says it won't happen. But what you can do is you can create either financial incentives to help that whistleblower, or you can create duties on the part of everybody in that workplace to come forward when someone's health or life or safety or life savings is at stake. And so in California, that's pretty much what we've done in many situations, and we're trying to do them in more and more. So I'll let others speak, but I wanted to plant the notion in your mind that the way we're going to stop the Enrons, the Tycos, is to exert humanity in the corporation. I have no doubt that sitting out there right now are people who've seen in the workplace something hazardous, something dangerous. Maybe you've come forward, maybe you haven't. But what we need, I think, to really solve this problem is to figure out what people in that place need to be able to come forward, and then to create some laws that make that real for society. So thank you.
Jamie Court is with the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights in California. He was speaking Thursday night here in Vancouver at a public forum on whistleblowers. Next, we're going to hear from Duff Conica, Executive Director of Democracy Watch in Ottawa. He points out that Canada has a long way to go to get the kind of whistleblower protections that Jamie Court was describing.
Whistleblowing is a key democratic reform to protect people who are looking to uphold their values in the workplace and ensure that the public interest is consistently upheld, that laws are followed, the regulations are followed, policies, programs, and guidelines all the way down the line in both government and corporations. Why is it so key? Because you can have the most effective access to information system you want, a strong law, an information commissioner in place, but if the employees of governments and corporations who are there and are in the know are not empowered to make information public themselves, no matter what a regulator does, no matter what the law says, that regulator is not in the workplace every day tracking what information is created, what information is required to be disclosed, what is shredded, and what is kept secret forever. You can have the most effective ethics enforcement system in a government and a corporation with an independent ethics watchdog, strong ethics rules with no loopholes, high penalties, and a full requirement to disclose as well in terms of overall patterns. But once again, if the employees of those institutions, whether government or corporate, who are in the know are not empowered to share what they know, then the regulators can only ever get so close to the inside operations of any government or corporate institution and hold them accountable for unethical behavior. You can have the most effective political finance system that limits donations and has strict limits and only allows individuals to donate. But again, if you don't have employees in government departments, in political parties, in corporations, empowered, once again, to share the information that they know, that political finance system will have a key loophole, which is that those who are in the know cannot share what they know. So whistleblower protection is a very key method of closing a key gap in a lot of the accountability measures and accountability systems that we've tried to build up over the years in Canada and other countries to ensure that governments and corporations are held accountable and are consistently required to uphold the public interest. As a result, because it is such a key measure, we don't have whistleblower protection of any real sort in Canada because of this key gap. How we close that gap? Well, we've got a lot of work to do. We're behind the U.S. in a lot of ways. In Canada, at the federal level, there's only 4 laws that provide any kind of right to blow the whistle. None of these 4 laws require people to blow the whistle. In all of those 4 laws, however, there's no one to go to blow the whistle who is empowered to investigate as well as protect the whistleblower from retaliation. So you're on your own. If you're unionized, then hopefully your union will back you up and the collective agreement will give you a bit stronger right. But if you're in a non-unionized corporation, and there's a lot of them out there, that's broken the Competition Act, you're on your own. You'll likely be fired, and you'll be testing your contract as to whether you upheld the loyalty clause of your contract, that duty to be loyal and keep your secrecy oath. You'll be without an income, and you'll be fighting in court to get your job back. And even if you do get your job back, as Jamie mentioned, you can just still be chilled at your job and not want to stay there because it's so horrible. But you don't even have a place to complain, and that's a key gap, even with these four laws, that will protect you, that will investigate, and that a place that essentially is a safe harbor that will shelter you from retaliation. As well, none of these four acts offer any sort of financial reward. In the U.S., there are 22 federal statutes that provide for whistleblower protection. In 33 U.S. states, the laws give general protection, so blowing the whistle about any violation of the law by any entity, government or corporate. And in three of those states, whistleblowers who report violations of codes or ethics codes or codes of conduct are also covered. We're not even touching that in terms of comprehensiveness of whistleblower protection in Canada. There's only one province, New Brunswick, that has such a general law. But once again, there is no place to go that will protect you as a member of the public or an employee. And there is no effective protection from retaliation, full compensation if you are retaliated against, let alone the financial reward. So how do we get over this hurdle and get some more laws in place as they have in the U.S.? Well, generally, we have to all band together and work in coalition to get over the barrier of governments who don't really want to be held more accountable and know that protecting whistleblowers will mean that they will be held more accountable. And also the huge corporate lobby that generally across the country funds most of the ruling parties. Also, those corporations do not want their actual internal reputations made public. The only reason that the polls have shown, I believe, in past years, more faith amongst Canadians in business as opposed to government is because businesses do not have access to information laws, ethics laws, or any kind of accountability measures that governments have. So all of their wrongdoing remains secret. Most corporate fraud is dealt with quietly, and the person is just let go, and the losses are buried on the books. So they don't want this accountability, and they haven't ever faced it. And the governments who have faced it want to weaken it or certainly not make it any stronger. So I urge you very much, if you are in any way affiliated with any citizen organization, to connect in with the people here, May Burroughs and others who are trying to build for a push here in BC for greater whistleblower protection. And if we don't band together, we won't have this key accountability measure that we all need in order to ensure that our governments and corporations are acting consistently in the public interest. Now, the resistance you're going to face will likely take the form of what's happened with the federal Liberals. They've been pushed. They promised in 94 a full whistleblower protection system. Finally, in November 2001, a new office was created called the Public Integrity Officer at the federal level for federal government employees. But this officer is within the public service and so has no independence. And he is enforcing a policy. This, I think, is the just says it all. The policy is called, this is a whistleblower protection policy, internal disclosure of information. So you can blow the whistle only to your superiors. And if you don't feel safe blowing the whistle to your superiors in the public service, in the federal government, then you can go to the public integrity officer, who apparently, because he operates in secret, I can only say apparently because we don't know, apparently has the power to protect public service servants from retaliation, and apparently has investigative powers to investigate whether the wrongdoing that the whistleblower reported was actually true, and then apparently also has the power to recommend a cleanup of any situation back to the superiors of the whistleblower. what if the superiors are the problem? And often they are. So where do you go? Well, even if you went to the public integrity officer, then all you're going to get is a recommendation back to your superiors. The public does not have a right to know that a policy guideline, law, or regulation has been broken. This is the federal Liberals' idea of whistleblower protection. So to his credit, the public integrity officer, Edward Kaiserlink is his name, he, in his first annual report, said that he needs stronger powers and also that whistleblowers should be rewarded financially if what they blow the whistle on is proven to be true. Sunshine is a very good disinfectant against corruption and all sorts of other abuses of the public interest. Employees have the brightest lights because they're in the know, and they have to have a very clear right and be fully protected and rewarded for sharing what they know. Thank you very much.
Duff Conacher is Executive Director of Democracy Watch in Ottawa. He was speaking Thursday night here in Vancouver at a public forum on whistleblowers. May Burrows was the last speaker of the evening. She's Executive Director of the Labour Environmental Alliance. She addresses the role of unions in protecting whistleblowers who speak out for the benefit of everyone.
So what I'd like you to come out of this talk with is a sense that there's a profound intertwined relationship between worker rights to protections when they're whistleblowers and the public good and the public interest. We're trained daily by many in the media, not everyone in the media, but by many in the media and government these days to think that, you know, unions are just a horrid little bunch of self-interested brats that couldn't care less about anything else in society. And that's absolutely not the case if we start looking at some of the very brave whistleblower acts that people have undertaken and have really paid for. And that if we start looking at how, if we're going to have the public interest really served these days, we need to do it in alliance. Unions need to put whistleblower stuff in their collective agreements as much as they can, try to create a climate, try to create a culture in their unions, but, you know, the public has to start really supporting unions in their collective agreement bargaining and so on as well. The thing that I know is that if you want an ally, you've got to be an ally. We've had a lot of Persons of the Year. Time Life has the whistleblowers on the front cover, and they're named People of the Year now. But we've got a situation where we have the need for whistleblowers, the freedom of information, the cost of freedom of information requests here in British Columbia is getting to the point where you almost have to sell your firstborn to be able to get some information. We've got government oversight offices and watchdog groups like the Auditor General, the Human Rights Commission, the Freedom of Information Commission, gutted. They were probably smart not to shut the doors because maybe then people would have complained, but they've gutted them. So we don't have those external watchdogs. We have a deregulation frenzy going on in this province with the government lacking totally in common sense and arbitrarily saying that they're going to cut one in every three regulations, period. We have industry self-regulation just coming out of our ears. So we're not living in a good climate where there is an information flow, where there is proper discussion and debate, and we're going to see some really big, irrevocable mistakes happen as a result of a lot of that. So it's very much in the public interest that we have the workers in those places being able to release information. We know about some of the big name public whistleblowers, but you know, how about here in British Columbia, the provincial, the BC Government and Service Employees Union member, the biologist, who couldn't let it go that there was going to be an entire spotted owl population on Vancouver Island going to extinction. She blew the whistle. She probably saved a species from going to extinction, and she paid for it dearly. How about the city hall managers and developers that are disregarding building inspectors' recommendations, and there's huge public consequences? Perhaps that's where some of the mold infestation has come from, because those workers, those QP workers, weren't able to speak out as they should have. The public might have really benefited from another group of QP workers speaking out if they had been able to. Those engineers who were designing the SkyTrain and who perhaps saw design implications that were going to lead to cost overruns. It happened. it's very much in the public interest that we make sure that we empower those kind of workers to be able to speak out. How about the municipal workers that have been talking about public-private partnerships that turn out to favor campaign managers of local mayors? How about the HEU workers who have been looking at contracted out laundry service and housekeeping services that's not contracted out for the public good? It's not contracted out because it's going to be cheaper, but it's contracted, in one case, whistleblowers from HEU let us know that it was contracted out to put money in the pocket of a former social credit health minister. How about the private sector? Canadian auto workers, a worker who has seen systemic racism in the airlines industry and saw a major airline putting East Indians always at the back of the plane, and she spoke out. We don't hear about these workers. They don't necessarily make the front pages, but they're people who are really, really working in the public good. So one of the things that we've seen in pretty well every talk is that we need to have a channel for whistleblowers to be able to express themselves, because usually what happens in the workplace is that who the whistleblower must speak to is the immediate supervisor, who is likely the person that is doing whatever it is that they have to blow the whistle for. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that we talk to each other. Public and unions need to talk to each other about how we can create some public channels that must have an external authority that someone can talk to. That's one of the key things that we need to work on together. It can't be looped back to a supervisor. We need to look at clauses in collective agreements that can protect worker rights when all other channels have failed and they feel they have to go public and blow the whistle. We need to start creating that environment outside of the unions that would support the negotiation of those clauses, because unions really can't do it on their own because of how tough negotiations are becoming these days. But what we need, in addition to clauses that protect whistleblowers, you know, in the collective agreements, we need to get at this whole business of what we're calling now a poisoned work environment, because oftentimes whistleblowers aren't fired, they're just tortured. They're tortured for, they're cornered, they're isolated, they're made irrelevant. Many of them, you know, you look at many whistleblower situations, they suffer from depression and alcoholism and all kinds of stress-related incidents after they've blown the whistle. They don't have an easy time of it. So one of the things that we're proposing is a poisoned work environment kind of language in collective agreements. The labor movement has quite frankly shown incredible leadership in dealing with harassment issues and getting harassment language into collective agreements. We've done anti-harassment work directed at protecting workers from sexual harassment, from gender-based harassment, from race or homophobic harassment. That's something that unions have done in their collective agreements, and I think that it's had a real spillover effect into society. And we've really raised the bar, and we really set a standard on that one by having specific clauses in agreements that can be grieved when you have a harassment situation. And we have a harassment support system set up in many, many unions so that if you do call, you know, you do claim that you're being harassed, you've got support, and you've got a collective agreement clause that will protect you. And like we'd like also to suggest that just as we have, you know, harassment support in unions, we'd like to suggest that maybe we try to encourage the education of unions ethics advisors, so that there would be an ethics advisor if you find yourself in a situation where you feel that you really have to blow the whistle on something, that you've got someone to go and talk to, so that you could do everything about you know, making sure that you cover yourself as much as possible, that you follow the proper channels inside, that you've, you know, kept a paper trail. You know, there's a number of things that you can do to survive whistleblowing to a certain extent, and an ethics advisor could help with that. An ethics advisor could also be a support system, be a witness, and an ethics advisor within unions could also start encouraging workshops on ethics and whistleblowing within unions. And that would be a way of getting some of this discussion at a ground floor, rank and file level, because that's what we need to do in unions, is to start talking to people so that we can spread and build this thing. So while unions need to work on this to build a culture of it within their unions by doing workshops and having ethics advisors or whatever, the public also needs to say, you know what, I really defend collective agreements and I really, really want, for my own good, protections for workers who are whistleblowers. That's something that we've got to start hearing from the public a lot more. We've got to develop channels for public discourse and channels for whistleblowing. I want to commend the BCGU again on this one because what they've done is something I think that's very, very creative. They have a kind of a real they have a bit of a whistleblower clause in their collective agreement. I say a bit of a one because it's sort of almost negative because it's one of those ones where you have to go and talk to your supervisor, and then maybe after talking to your supervisor quite a while and not really working things out at all because he was the problem, then you get to go talk to the ADM at the end of the day, and that's about it. So what the BCGEU has posted on their website is kind of a brown envelope site, so that if one of their members wants to send in confidence some information to the union, then they will help that member work through that issue with them. And I think that that's a very creative thing and a very brave thing for the union to do, and I really commend them for that. We need to be promoting the concept of whistleblower and not letting it become a negative, not letting it slip back into a negative term. I think it was a very negative term, and I think to some people it still is, but let's capitalize on Time Life's Persons of the Year and the kind of moment that we have and seize the opportunity and work together to make a political priority of protecting worker rights, because that is in the public interest. Thank you.
We've been listening to Mae Burrows of the Labour Environmental Alliance. She was one of a number of speakers who addressed a public forum on whistleblowers at the Vancouver Public Library on Thursday evening. The forum was organized by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.